was, sorry.
You say to your healer at songs in your amidra at the end, one before.
Start your day at Terraway, North West London. Thursday, 13th of Iyar, 4th of May, Rabbi Yitzchok Shochet Shlita of Royals and Cheesecake. This week's Torah will be sponsored anonymously.
Chazisa ish moher b'malachtoi, says Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei, if you see a person who is diligent in his work, lefnei melochim yisyatsov, he will be able to stand before kings. This is, of course, a pre-coronation shir. So let's consider the lesson that we can learn in regard to ourselves. Shlomo HaMelech is saying when you see a person being diligent in their work, by definition, when you really truly apply yourself in the way that you need to whatever it is at hand, and you are really diligent in everything that you do, then lifnei melochim yisyatsov. You can scale the ranks. You can soar all the way up to the point where ultimately you'll stand before royalty. You'll be able to rub shoulders even with the highest echelons of society. Comes along the Medrash and says, al tikrei melochim ela malochim. Don't read the pasuk milochim, you'll be able to stand before kings, but malochim, you'll be able to actually stand before malochim, angels. And then the Medrash carries on and tells us a story. The story of Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa, who, as we know from various stories in the Gemara, was someone who had all kinds of nisim, all kinds of miracles that occurred to him in various circumstances, but was also somebody who was destitute. He really struggled, didn't have any means. And the Gemara, the Medrash relays the story about how it was a time when people were bringing karbonos to the Beis HaMikdash before a Yom Tov or whatever, and he was upset. He was upset because he couldn't afford to bring a karbon. So what does he do? He goes to the quarry, which was Hefker, was no man's land, just outside Yerushalayim, and he decides, here I can go and chisel out a nice, beautiful piece of Jerusalem stone and bring that to the Beis HaMikdash. It's not going to cost me anything, and at the same time, it's still quite beautiful, as we know Jerusalem stone can be, and that will be my gift to the Beis HaMikdash. And he proceeds to chisel it out. Only afterwards, anyone who's ever experienced Jerusalem stone knows, as beautiful as it is, it's also incredibly heavy. So now, how is he going to get it from the quarry to the Beis HaMikdash? So he starts looking around for people to help. He encounters one group of people, and they tell him 50, whatever the currency, shekel. And he says, if I had that kind of money, I would have bought myself a small animal. I would have brought my own to the Beis HaMikdash. And he continues to walk around. He finds another small group of five people standing there. And they say, they'll do it for 5 shekel. Five, that I can afford for me. For him, it was no small change. It was a considerable sum. But nevertheless, that's something he would have been able to give. And he agrees. They do the deal, except they say, but we insist that you have to help us carry it. Fine, I'll help you carry it. Gesundheit. Says the Medrash, no sooner does he put his hands on the stone together with them, and they're transported over to the Beis HaMikdash. And he realizes, aha, so these are not ordinary people. These were malachim. But a deal's a deal, so he turns around to pay them, and they're no longer there. Begging the question, Memonafshach, if they were malachim, and they were intending to do this nest, this miracle anyway, and they were going to transport him there anyway, first of all, why are they asking him for the money? And second of all, why do they insist that he has to help them carry it? Just say, come, let's go, let's do this. So the answer is, Hishtadlus, in other words, like the Medrash tells us in Shir HaShir, where it says, Piskuli Kechuta Shalmachat, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, open up for me, like the little needle, the hole of a needle, Vaniyaktach L'chok Piskuli Shal'ab will open up for you like the openings of a banqueting hall. In other words, you apply your Hishtadlus, your little bit of effort, you demonstrate, Mohir B'malachta, your diligence, your willingness to do what you can do, and then I'll take you the rest of the distance. That Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa wanted to bring something to the Beis HaMikdash, that's a given. But how much do you really want to do this? Are you willing to part with your hard-earned money? Are you willing to actually help us carry it? And when he demonstrates all of that, then obviously they take him the whole way, they take him the rest of the distance. The Michtam Elio actually points out, why dafka does it say, pick a kechuta shalmachat, a needle hole? Right, you know, open up for me a hole, right? Whatever kind of hole. So why is it emphasized dafka needle hole? Because from mitzad echad, a needle hole is very small. But on the other hand, a needle hole is what goes through and through. As long as you go through and through, durk and durk, you really apply yourself, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take you the rest of the way. Thus, as the pasuk, chazisa ish mar b'malachta, you see a person who's genuinely diligent, to really want to apply themselves, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, willing to part with his harder money, willing to help them carry it, lifnei malachim yisyatsev, not just before kings, you'll rub shoulders with royalty, but you'll find yourself actually standing before malachim, before angels. Now, I suggest to you, the word lifnei, which means before, has a twofold connotation. On the one hand, standing before somebody implies their superiority to you. I stand before a king. I stand before malachim, angels, whatever. But the word lifnei before can also imply some superiority that I have to them. Like if we're standing in a line and I'm standing before you, that means I'm in front of you, which means I am ahead of you. I am superior to you. Now let's consider that in this context of this particular pasuk. Malachim themselves, to be frank, do sometimes have something of a superiority complex. And you find, at the very beginning of Bereshis, the whole story of the Nephilim. The Nephilim, these Malachim, Shem Chazai and Azal, turn around to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they say, look what's going on down below. You're creating mankind. They're going to distort, they're going to destroy, they're going to ruin everything that you intend for your world in the first instance. Send us down, and we'll do a much better job. And as we know, per the story, that they were sent down to earth, and Rashi references this a number of times, based on the pasuk, they came into the world and they were utterly corrupt and they were engaged in all kinds of corruption and they fathered children left, right, and center. Fast forward to the story of Matan Torah, and the Gemara tells us the Malachim turned around to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, "Tzno haitchal shemayim." Again, don't give the Torah down below. They're just going to mess up. Keep your glory here upstairs in Shemayim. So there is this mindset, of course, of Malachim perceiving themselves to be far superior to mankind. Except, of course, there will always be Yechidei Skula. There'll always be certain Rebbes, certain greats, certain Sadiqim, B'chol Dor V'Dor, Ispashtuso D'Moshe B'chol Dor V'Dorah. There'll always be some great Sadiq in every single generation whom they will acknowledge and marvel at being on par with them, if not maybe even a little greater than them, which is why when the Malachim came, all excited, the three Malachim, to see Avraham Avinu, Sadik Shebedorai, the righteous one of his own generation, to see how great he is. Let's see the mortal down below who is so great and on par with us. So imagine their disappointment when they come before Avraham Avinu and they would expect to find him sitting and learning a Sheif Shmaitis or doing whatever else. And instead, what is he doing? He's running around. He's running around looking to get some chema, some butter, some cholov, some milk. He's running to bakar. He's running to go ahead and get the cattle. He's running to go ahead and bake cookies. He's running around doing all of this kind of material, mundane activity. How disappointed they must have been, thinking to themselves, this is the uniqueness. This is the tzaddik shebedar. This is what mankind is all about. But what they came to discover is that the majesty of human holiness is not soaring like angels in heaven, but daily acts of love and of selflessness to be there for somebody else in a very real and pragmatic way.
So why did Hashem agree to this?
And therefore, in that context, lifnei malachim yisyatsov. It's not al tikre milachim ela malachim. We are ultimately superior to even Malachim. Srafim oimdim mima'al. Malachim is a fact. They're stagnant. They're limited. They're always just stuck in wherever they are, in their zone, to do whatever it is that they need to do. A person is a mahalik. Srafim Oim Dimimala, Malach is Oimed, he's stagnant, he's stuck, he's limited to whatever capacity that he was there for. But an Odom, a person, is a Mahalach, he's constantly fluctuating, he's constantly moving, he's constantly progressing, and has infinite power. We were declared Mamlechas Koyanim Begoy Kodesh, at Har Sinai we were declared HaKadosh Baruch Hu's regal nation, regal people, regal children, who have majesty, who have glory, who have the power to do whatever it is we want to do. The Gur Aryeh says, a malach, his whole mitzius, kol mitzuyosoy shel malach, the whole essence of a malach, is lasoy shlichusoy, virak shlichus echa, to do his mission, his purpose, and only that one specific mission and purpose for which he was created. Nothing more, nothing less. A person, on the other hand, can achieve so much more than that. Can embrace countless forms of shlichus and go on to achieve whatever he or she wants to achieve. The Baal HaTanya, when he once came to Shklov in Belarus, made a statement, a very unusual statement. He said, Malachim are chitzonim, and Hashama is a pnimi. Angels are chitzonim, they're extrovert. They're maybe a little bit more, not superficial, but along those lines. But an Hashama, what we contain, is a pnimi. That's sincere. It's deep. It's intrinsic. It's so much more. And there was a big tumult. There were a lot of goyim in the city at the time, and they were tumbling, looking for references here, there, everywhere. They couldn't find, and they were really perplexed. He let them tumble for a few days. And then he explained very simply. He said, when the malachim came to Avraham Avinu, what happened? By Yeshu, they sat down to eat their bread, but they didn't really eat, right? Rashi says, osu atzman. They pretended as though they were eating bread. They're chitzonim. So they were pretending to eat bread when in essence they weren't eating bread. What you saw was not really necessarily what you really got. Moshe Rabbeinu, on the other hand, when he went up to Shemayim, Arboim Yoim Barboim Laila, for 40 days and 40 nights, Lechem Lo Yachol, he didn't eat any bread, he didn't drink any water, he didn't pretend, he actually didn't eat any bread. He didn't pretend like not to eat bread, but in actual fact eat bread. A malach is a chitzoni, they were portraying one thing when something else was going on, but a neshama, as reflected by Moshe Rabbeinu, is a pnimi. That's the essential difference between a person and a malach. There was a student who once came before the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he asked the question, why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu make us like malachim? As human beings, we mess up all the time. We make mistakes. Things go wrong. If we were malachim, then everything would be perfect. So the Rebbe looked at him and asked him, tell me, what is it you're studying? So he said, I'm studying art. So the Rebbe asked him the following question. If you're standing before a landmark, let's for argument's sake use Buckingham Palace, and you took a picture, a photograph of that landmark, and then you wanted to sell that photograph, how much would it be worth? And he thought a moment. He goes, I don't know, maybe a few pennies, a few dollars, whatever. And what the Rebbe then asked him is, if you go ahead and you paint that landmark, and you wanted to sell the painting, how much would that be worth? He said, well, that could be worth a fair bit more, and if I become a renowned painter, and my name is out there and all that, I'll be able to sell that for a lot more sometimes. So the Rebbe said to him, but it makes no sense. The photograph is a perfect depiction of the landmark. A painting is not a perfect depiction. It's you doing whatever you can to the best of your ability to go ahead and paint that landmark. So why is it that the painting sells for so much more than the picture? And the student stood there thinking, looking a bit perplexed, and the Rebbe smiled and went on to explain. He says, because a photograph is nothing other than just a cold, still reflection and depiction of the very landmark upon which you are taking the photograph. But a painting is reflecting so much more. It's also reflecting what's going on in the mind and the perception and the heart and the soul and the passion and the yearnings of the actual painter, him or herself. And then went on to explain. He goes, a malach is a photograph. A malach is in essence a cold, perfect depiction of divinity, the shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A human being, on the other hand, is like a painter. There are all the fluctuations of the human experience and the highs and the lows and whatever else besides and everything that's going on internally within our own neshamas. All the good stuff and all the turmoil and everything else in between. And a painting is worth a lot more than a photograph. We have the ability to create our own masterpiece here in this particular world. When the Meraglim came out of Eretz Yisrael, what did they say after everything else that they described? They talked about the fortified cities and the mammoth fruit and whatever else besides, and the big people, and then they added and said, V'gam Nephilim, and also the Nephilim which we saw there. Again, Rashi references it back to the story in Bereishis. These were the children that were the offspring of the original Nephilim, Shamchazeh and Azal, who came down into this world. And they're saying what? Oh, I mean, why did they add reference to the Nephilim? Why is that relevant to add into the mix of everything else that they were already saying to make their big impression about this task that would be, as far as they were concerned, formidable? And the answer is because, look, even Nephilim, even the original Malachim, look what happened to them. They're making reference to the Nephilim, the children of the Nephilim that they saw in Eretz Yisrael to demonstrate, look, even Malachim falter. Look what happens to them. They came into the world. Look what happens. Look how corrupt they be. How are we supposed to endure? How on earth are we going to cope? But a mistake it was, and a big mistake at that. Because where Malachim might falter, and Neshama, a Yid, has the ability to achieve and go on to do so much more. Thus says Yeshua and Kalev, Im chafetz Hashem bonu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us. He doesn't want Malachim. He wants us. We have the ability to go on to achieve. Don't look at Malachim and take an example from that. You're higher than a Malach. Lefnei Malachim Yisyatsov. You can stand and you can soar higher than any Malachim. The Sepharno tells us something quite unbelievable. He asks the question, Batitzchak Sarah Bekirba. Sarah laughs and when she's told by the Malachim about the pending birth of Yitzchak. He says, Lama Tzachaka Sarah, why did Sarah laugh? And the Sepharno goes on to explain. He says, because it was a bracha from a malach. He says, the idea of a woman of 90 years old to have a child is a nes on par with tchias hameisim. And who can give that kind of bracha? He says, it was a bracha from malachim. The only kind of example of a bracha that can offer a bracha in respect to that kind of nes would be either if it was a direct tzivoy, a direct command from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and she would have no reason to believe what they were saying was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or al yidei tfilosoi, through the power of tfilah of an adam, through the power of a sincere prayer of an individual. Imagine that. The Sepharno is telling us categorically that a nes like that which Sarah experienced, or was told she was going to experience, is on par with Tchias HaMeisim that could never really come to be, not even through the bracha of a malach. That's why she laughed. Who are you to give me that kind of bracha? That bracha could only ever really come about if it came directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or via somebody from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or through the sincere prayer of an individual. By definition, the tefillah, your sincere tefillah, is greater than the bracha of a malach. So the title is Of Royalty and Cheesecake. What does that have to do with cheesecake? Well, why do we eat milk on Shavuos? So we know, the Mishnah Berurah tells us, and Tov Tzadik Dalet, that after Matan Torah, there was an immediate problem, of course, with their kalim, and they have to do shechita, and they have to make the knives, and so on and so forth. So meat is now not readily available to them, and therefore they resort to eating only dairy, and that's why we have dairy in order to reflect that, remember all that which happened at Matan Torah. The Shulah comes along and tells us, because there is a common mistake, or I mean, call it a mistake, but a misconception that we only have to have dairy and therefore we don't have to have meat. The Pasuk says, V'samachta b'chagecha. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us very clearly that ain simcha b'lei basar. So you have to have meat as well, and therefore the recommended process is to have some dairy and then wait whatever time one waits, and then after that, and bench and whatever, then have a meal of basar, have a meal of meat as well. And he brings a proof from the fact that you have the Bikurim that is mentioned in the Torah immediately after the Bikurim, which of course was on Shavuos, Loisevashel Gediba Chalevimai. So that the one follows that, in other words, on Shavuos itself, have the milk and then afterwards have the meat. But then there's an altogether different point to consider in this regard about why we have the milk and then the meat meal on Shavuos. Referencing back to what we said before, when Moshe Rabbeinu came up above, after the story of the, but in order to be able to receive the second luchos, so the malachim say, "Tnahodcha l'shamayim, give your glory up here in Shemayim. Don't give it down below." V'haloi esma es avru aleha. Didn't they yesterday, when you gave them the first set of luchos, didn't they immediately violate it? they immediately went ahead and created all kinds of problems. They went and made an egel azov, they made a golden calf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds and says, Behol shah katigun bein yuvein bin Israel. Constantly you're trying to create problems, challenges, coming in between me and the Bnei Yisrael. And then, V'haloi atem kishiyaradatem eitzel Avraham achaltem basar b'cholof. Isn't it the case that when you went to Avraham, you also violated? You ate basar b'cholof, you ate milk and meat. The Pasuk says very clearly over there, there was chema, and there was cholof, and there was basar. There was all kinds of dairy, and there was also bakar, there was also meat that was served over there. Referencing back to our earlier story. So first of all, the question to be asked is, I mean, Hagufa Kasha, how is it that Avraham himself actually served them milk and meat? And the answer, of course, is, Omer Rav, says, I mean, within that question, Rav says in the Gemara in Yuma, that Avraham Avinu Kayim Kol HaTorah Kula, he kept the whole Torah even prior to his having been given. So on that basis, why is he serving them milk and meat? And the answer is very clear as well. Because when you look at the Lashon of the Pasuk says that first Avraham gave them chema v'cholav, he gave them butter, he gave them cheese, and he gave them milk and whatever else besides. And then it says, v'la baka ruts, and then he ran to get the meat. And that takes time to prepare. So if you look at the sequence of the wording in the Pasuk, first he gave them the dairy, and then he went ahead and gave them the meat. And it took time even to prepare the meat. So they would have had even that hour's gap between the milk and the dairy and the meat. On that basis, therefore, begging the question, so what is the time of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When they come around and they say to Hashem, V'loi Esmol, yesterday they messed up on the Torah, why are you giving it to them? Leave it up here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but didn't you eat milk and meat by Avraham? No, we ate milk and then meat. Yeah, what's the problem? So the Shalach, she points out, why is it generally the case that the mixture of milk and meat is forbidden? Upi Kabbalah, if you will. The answer is, and it's brought in a number of places, chalav, milk, is midas hachesed. It's compassion, it's serenity. Milk is serene, it flows, it's white. We give that to a baby. Kabbalah says it's the first thing we feed to a baby because you want to inculcate the baby with midas hachesed, etc. Basar, meat, on the other hand, that's gvura. It's hard, it's tough, it's red, it shrinks the more you roast it, etc., etc. And these two attributes can never really mix. You can't mix chesed and gvura. They don't go together. They are, in actual fact, diametric opposites. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Eisa Shalom Bimremov, Hu Yasa Shalom Aleinu. He who makes peace on high, meaning what? That you have midas chesed up above and you have midas gvura up above. And it takes for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be able to make shalom between them. But otherwise, as far as we're concerned, they're diametric opposites. They don't mix. You can't mix the midah of chesed reflected in milk and the midah of gvura reflected in meat. Obviously, you need both in life. When it comes to chinuch, you obviously have to show love to a child. You have to show chesed to a child. But you also have to discipline, therefore the element of gvura. In our own lives, there is the element of chesed that is absolutely paramount. And there has to be a certain discipline. There has to be sometimes a certain toughness, which is the midah of gvura. Of the two, obviously, ultimately, you have to have more chesed than gvura. You have to have both. You can't have unbridled love to a child, because you'll have a spoiled brat who will think that they can get away with anything and everything. You can't just have gvura, because that tough discipline all of the time is going to utterly destroy the child. A blend of the two, but predominantly more chesed than actual gvura, constantly showing them the love. Al pi halacha, the Gemara in Pesachim tells us, cham lo teich tzeinim v'tzein lo teich cham. When you have a mixture of first cold falling on top of hot and hot falling on top of cold, Rav Omar Ilo Gavar, Ushmul Omar Tato Gavar. Rav says, whatever falls on top, if that's the hot item, that's what prevails and will render something not kosher. And Shmul Omar Shmul says, Tato Gavar, whatever's at the bottom is that which prevails. And therefore, ultimately, if it's the hot item specifically at the bottom, then that will render the mixture not kosher. So if there's hot at the bottom and cold on the top, Shmuel says, Tato Gavar, that's the halacha, whatever's at the bottom prevails. And if what's at the bottom is hot, then it renders the mixture problematic. If, on the other hand, what's at the bottom is cold, and what's at the top is hot, still, Tato Gavar, so therefore you take whatever's at the top, you remove Kedei Klipa, and you're okay. So this machlokes, the La Gavar or Tato Gavar, does the upper prevail, or does the bottom prevail? The halacha is the bottom prevails. That's why you can't mix milk and meat. Because if you take meat in first, which is gevura, and then you're going to go ahead and have milk, then tata gavar. What is at the bottom, midas hagevura, prevails and overrides. And that should never be the case in any of our lives. You have to wait, whatever it is, 3 hours, 6 hours, but you have to wait till that meat is completely digested. You have to wait till that gevura is out of your system, and then you can go ahead and take in the chesed. Otherwise, the gevura overrides the chesed. On the other hand, if you have dairy first, so that's chesed, that comes into your body first, that's at the bottom, tata gavar. If you have chesed at the bottom, it'll prevail over the meat, over the gevura, such that you therefore don't have that same gap required between the milk and then there afterwards the meat. The malachim come along to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzno haitcha ala shemayim, give your glory up here in heaven, not down below. Ila'a gavar. What is up above, we, the malachim, should prevail. We should be gavar. Leave the Torah here. We are superior. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to them, V'loi esmo l'chaltem, yesterday you ate by Avraham, v'asar v'chala, v'chala v'basar. You ate the mixture. You had, in terms of strict halacha, you had it okay. You had your milk, and then you had your meat. But you ate it in that order, milk and then meat. If you truly believe that ilah gavar, like Rav, then you should have had the meat first and then the milk. But you didn't. You ate it in the same order as we all eat it. You ate the milk first and then the meat, because even you agree that tata'a gavar, down below, is what ultimately prevails. That mankind down below, the Torah belongs here on earth, tata'a gavar. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in the first instance, Nesava HaKadosh Baruch Hu Elias Loidira B'tachtoinim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this world to be a place where his Shechina can be appropriately manifest. Tata Gavar, the Torah has to be given here down below. Because ultimately man prevails. Man is superior to even Malachim. So when we look at a once in a generation event of a haftarah, of a coronation, etc., etc., it gives us reason to pause and to reflect and to consider two things. First of all, the obvious lesson in the days of Sfira are that in the broader scheme of things, under the majesty of royalty, all subjects, to one extent or another, are what you might say relatively equal. Halachas kamo v'kamo, when it comes to the majesty of Melech, Malchi, Amlochim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to all appreciate that we are all equal, that no one person is better than the other, which is an obvious lesson to take into account. Dafke b'imei Sfira, the story of Rabbi Kiva and Talmidav, etc. But in our context, in the bigger scheme of things, when we're reflecting on a coronation, we have to remember that we are malachim, we are mamleches kainim, at Matan Torah HaKadosh Baruch Hu proclaimed us as his regal nation. Chazisa ish moher b'malachto, when you see a person being diligent in his work, in his avoda, in his purpose, and in his objective of making this world here down below, a dira, the dwelling that HaKadosh Baruch Hu so wants and desires, then lefnei milachim v'lefnei malachim yisyatzov. He will stand and he remains ultimately superior in achieving that objective, both higher than malachim, mortal kings and royalty, and also malachim, higher and superior even to angels as well. And the obvious message, don't underestimate your power.